It's noon here in Ventnor City, New Jersey, and Sacramento, California. And this is news that you can use from Car Edge for Friday, April 12th, with your hosts, me, Ray, and, well, Justice, not Zach. How are you today, Justice?
I'm doing well. I just would like to clarify, it is not noon in Sacramento. It's 9 a.m. Sacramento.
That's right. You know, I get so carried away. It's 9 a.m. in Sacramento. It just feels like noon to me in Sacramento.
Yes. Right. Feels like noon to me, too. Yes, Zach is in the Bay. He's in my neck of the woods.
Yes.
He's doing his leadership training.
He is somewhere up in the Bay Area, exactly where, I have no idea. And I believe he's flying back home sometime today.
Right. You guys are doing 6 hours tomorrow on the other show, right?
Well, maybe
I believe I heard that somewhere. Yeah,
maybe he's doing 6 hours, but I'm not. Anyway, I saw some interesting news in automotive news this morning, which I shared with you. And Zach, God bless him, he does the thumbnails and he does the headlines. So it became automakers are getting desperate, even more layoffs. And I wanted to talk about the article and about the actual human toll of switching over to EVs and layoffs and how it impacts people's lives in ways that we don't normally think of. If you could pull up that first article, I would greatly appreciate it, because God knows I don't know how to share. I do know how
you
to
do. Share. You do.
Just not well. Mounting auto industry layoffs underscore rocky EV transition and the UAW contracts. And if I may, I don't think the UAW contracts, honestly, have anything to do with this. I think Ford came out and said that the new UAW contract was adding, what, $425 or $450 in cost per vehicle. That's negligible. And that cost per vehicle, if they, I don't know, got rid of some upper management that was redundant to their business that they didn't really need, that if they actually cut some costs, some bloated costs that every manufacturer has, they could absorb that $450 quite easily. So I don't think the UAW contract really plays into it as much as maybe manufacturers would like to suggest it does. Rather than actually look at their bloated corporate budgets and where they could find some savings,
well, yeah,
they'd rather blame someone else, in my opinion. And I always have to say that. But we saw in that article that there have been layoffs at Ford. They stopped production for quite some time on Ford Lightnings and the Mach-E. There's been layoffs at Stellantis, at their Mack truck division. And most of the layoffs are being attributed to the slowdown in the EV adoption rate. That, for those people who work the lines building these things, I mean, that's got to be scary to suddenly one day find yourself, temporarily unemployed.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm not sure if I agree that the UAW contracts have nothing to do with this, or little to do with this. But certainly there is something to be said about the EV division. But, you know, for me, I also look at, you know, the 187,000 jobs created by EV-only companies in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is, you know, where would those people be without those companies? They'd probably be over at the big three, I would assume. So, you know, I don't know if it's just shuffling people back and forth. it's certainly, I would not feel comfortable as a UAW worker right now if I was even not in the EV plant, because I don't think it's just the EV folks that are being laid off. It's just, it's a shuffling everywhere. So, so I agree. I don't think I'd be comfortable right now. I'd be kind of like, okay, where else can I go?
What other skill sets do I have? And it's not, and part of the problem is how it impacts the suppliers and how suppliers negotiate having enough employees. I mean, if there are deals in place with the big manufacturers for items that they're going to need as they move forward into battery electric, and then suddenly there's a slowdown in the adoption, there's a rethinking. I mean, you know, look at Ford. Ford is now suggesting, and this was in that article, that they're going to lose $5.5 billion this year on EVs. $5.5 billion. Now, that's not to say that they still won't end up making, I don't know, $12 to $15 billion on their Pro division and their ICE division. But Ford has been rethinking their investments into all battery electric, and they've decided that they're going to spend more money on hybrids. Well, that impacts their what it is that they're going to need from some of those suppliers, which is causing those suppliers to be laying off people. And there must be suppliers who supply the suppliers that are laying off people. I mean, it's just, it's a domino effect that impacts more people than I think we realize. What do you think, Justice?
Yeah, I think I definitely think it impacts a lot more people than we're sort of looking at on the surface. Yeah, there's a lot of the people we talk to are just like, well, it's about price. People don't want EVs because of price. But, you know, the thing that we've talked about on the EV show, especially a lot, is people forget, and I think Ford and Stellantis certainly are ones who forget, that Tesla lost money for 15 years before they became profitable.
Yes.
And these people saw the Tesla success and said, I want that. But I don't know that they were ready for these upfront costs. And they thought, since they already made cars, that it would be an easier transition than it is. They're trying to make EVs the way they make ICE vehicles, and it's just not the right manufacturing technique. And so I think there's two of them for a lot more loop. And I don't think that the people were ready for it. And I don't think they prepared the employees for it. I don't think they thought that far. You know, we can argue whether CEOs ever think of the employees or not at these companies. I know my CEO does, and I'm very appreciative of that. But but on, you know, on these large OEMs, I'm not sure that, you know, how much they took that into account. And we're looking at it. I think that was part of the reason for the UAW strike, right? Because they hadn't had any movement in so many years, and they needed this. And I do kind of agree that maybe OEMs are pointing to that contract instead of the EVs more than they should be.
I get the sense that, especially at Ford, and you know, I bash Ford quite a bit, but I will give them flowers when they deserve flowers. And they looked at what they were doing, and they realized that what they were doing wasn't working and wasn't going to work. And they have pivoted. And so, I mean, that takes, as a CEO, that takes a lot of courage to say to your team around you and to your stockholders, I bet wrong. I think I got out a little too far over my skis, and I think we need to readjust. So I give them credit for that. I really do. I mean, that was to realize that mistake and to try and change it. But I will stick to my point that I think these manufacturers use the UAW contract as an excuse and as a crutch, to to deflect blame where the blame really belongs, which is upstairs in the executive offices. There is.
Well, to your.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, to that point, you know, it's. I give them credit for coming out and saying, okay, you know, we did it wrong, because in this day and age, that can literally cost you your job and cost the company billions in stock revenue, because people go, oh, well, you don't know what you're doing. I'm going to sell all my stock. I'm going to jump ship. And then you're, you know, so it takes, I think, more courage than people think to go out there and say, I was wrong. It's not just a matter of pride.
Yes.
It's also a matter of how does that affect your stock? And if anyone wants to look at how a company's stock is affected by what the CEO says, take a look at Tesla.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's kind of that volatile world where, so if you come out and you're willing to admit we miscalculated, we misjudged, and we got to, you know, there's a lot more than just your personal pride involved in that. And so I do give them kudos for that. And, you know, luckily for the market, they haven't all jumped, all the stockholders haven't jumped ship.
But. And I was going to add that, you know, all companies have waste and bloat.
Yeah.
Okay. And my son's not here to defend himself, but I'm going to say that there's waste and bloat in our company. Okay. Yes. And our company is, you know, not even a pimple on Ford's butt in terms of the size of our company. But you know, there, if we looked really hard, we could find ways to save money and to improve the bottom line of the company. Typically, businesses only look at every one of their expenses when things are bad, not when things are good. And if you should be looking when things are good, because that's when you get carried away and spend on stuff you shouldn't spend on. But my point still is that there is so much waste and so much bloat and so much redundancy within these large corporations, in whether it be middle management or upper management, that there is so much money that could be saved that you would no longer have to use the UAW as your excuse or your crutch for, you know, why you're doing the things that you're doing. And that's the aspect of it that bothers me, because let's face it, the guys that are working on the line building these things, regardless of how much or how little they get paid, it is minuscule in comparison to what the executives are getting paid. In an article we discussed last week, Ford's executives over, what was it, the past 5 years have earned $365 million. Ford as a company has earned billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And over that same five-year period of time, paid $115 million in taxes, which was like 1.5% of their earnings. So it's...
But it wasn't that of their global earnings.
I believe so.
I mean, so, you know, they pay more than that in taxes when you consider all the countries that they're in, I'm sure. But it's still minuscule, and it doesn't change your point. But you know, I know our chat, and I know it'll be pointed out. So I just wanted to catch that up front. Yes, it's still minuscule in the point of it. And, you know, I'm not one to always point out CEO pay, because I always say, you know, look, take the CEO pay, divide it among all the workers. What are you getting, $1 an hour? Like, it's not huge when you divide it across the company, but
yes,
there is a discrepancy there. There is, as you said, like, I look at pandemic and, you know, just before in the boom economic times, and I go, how much money did you set aside? Because we know rainy days come. So why, you know, shouldn't you have set a lot of that profit aside for when the recessions hit, when downturns hit, and then not go, well, we just can't pay these people more, and what they're being unreasonable. Like, isn't that's what a rainy day fund is for?
Yeah, but you have to believe that there's going to be a rainy day. Okay. And you know, let's face it, CEOs don't get paid when there's rainy days. They're supposed to just keep the stock price soaring so that there's a reason for them to be able to get paid what they get paid. But the human toll is, we just, I guess I'm trying to be empathetic to those who find themselves suddenly out of a job, after having gone on strike to get better wages, to improve their benefits, and for some of these folks, all of that is zero because they no longer have a job. They've been laid off. They haven't been informed as to whether or not these are long-term layoffs, short-term layoffs. Will they be offered positions at other facilities? It has a real human cost that impacts a lot of people. And I feel for those people. And GM is retooling some of their plants at, what was it, the Fort Wayne facility where they build the pickup trucks. And they're planning downtime at the Fort Wayne plant. There's three separate weeks where they'll be shutting down for a week at a time because they'll be in the process of retooling for the new Silverados. So, you know, I'm guessing I don't know this for a fact because I don't know the ins and outs of the UAW contracts, but I can't imagine that the GM, if they have to pay these people for not working, that they have to pay them 100% of what their earnings would be. My suspicion would be is that they would only have to pay them a percentage of those, what their earnings would have been had they been allowed to work those weeks. So there's future impact that we're looking at that continues within this industry. It's a tough time at best, I think, to be a worker within the confines of these manufacturing facilities.
Well, look, we have a show that talks, you know, 5 days a week about the news of the industry and how up and down and up and down and up and down it is. I mean, people accuse us of using the same headlines all the time, but realistically, if you go through our channel, there's been a lot of ups and downs, even on our headlines, because that's what the news is. And that affects the workers far more than it affects the company and the executives, to your point, and all that, you know. And it's got to be rough to be in that industry right now. I don't know what industry you move to that's stable necessarily right now. Maybe medical or, you know, run for Congress.
but running for Congress doesn't pay. It only pays if you actually win the election.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know. There are some campaign war chests that seem to disappear from the losers. But the point is, like, it is a rocky industry, and I think, to your point, the human capital is those on the front line of it are the ones who are sort of put in the biggest position. I haven't seen anyone laying off a lot of executives in any of these. When we're talking about the layoffs, I'm not seeing, hey, you know, Ford fired 12 vice presidents.
Yeah, no, we haven't seen that, because if they fired 12 vice presidents, that would compensate for the UAW contract. But that's besides the point. We have seen at Stellantis where they let go 440 engineers. So, you know, these are not people that are actually working on the line building the vehicles. These are engineers who thought they had a good solid job that, well, are now looking for work. It's a tough industry. Now, there was another article that I sent you about Ford, and once again Ford cutting the Lightning prices.
They cut prices and they're ready to resume shipments. They had stopped shipments there for a while, right?
For quite some while.
Yeah.
And nobody knew exactly what it was for, why they weren't shipping the vehicles. Some suggested that there were some issues, the quality issues that needed to be addressed before they shipped them, which would be a whole new strategy for Ford to take care of those issues before they actually ship a vehicle. So give them credit for that, if that's exactly what they were doing. But in order to once again try and spur sales for the F-150 Lightning, they have had to lower prices again. And it's...
Again, they say, you know, in here, they cut prices on April 5th, partially to reverse the hikes that went in January. So, you know, how much of a game is that? How much of a game is it a game of, well, we've raised prices, so now we lower prices and we go, look, it's lower. And like, oh, yeah, but you had just raised prices 4 months ago. So is it really lower?
Well, it's lower than it was.
Lower than the hike.
Yeah. The one price that did not change was on their least expensive Lightnings, the Lightning Pro, which is, I guess, for commercial vehicles. That's still like $55,000. Even with these price cuts, I mean, there's still $55,000, $67,000, $70,000. I don't know how that's a low enough price to spur sales. And you deal with this stuff all the time.
Yeah, I deal with a lot of deals every day, and almost all EV deals get thrown through me for obvious reasons.
Yes.
I've never had a single Ford Lightning come across my desk.
Really?
Not a single one. Nobody's even asked about it. You know, Mach-E's, I get those all the time, but the Lightning, I think, is so overpriced. And I've said this, we say this about the Cybertruck, we say this about the Lightning, is these, most people who buy pickup trucks want them to do stuff with, and just EV isn't there. It's not like you're hauling your boat on the weekend. It's not like you're using it to load it up for work. You can't drive out to the middle of a construction site typically on an EV and get back out, you know. So I think they're impractically priced for the people who just want a show truck, and they're, you know, the price for people who want to use it for work, but they're not good for work. So I think for me, this is sort of a swing and a miss.
But the thing that I find amazing is that when they first announced the Lightning and that the base truck was going to be $39,000, which is now almost $55,000, there were so many orders. You know, the order bank filled up and overflowed instantly. And yet they haven't produced there was like 150,000 orders day one. I don't think they've produced 150,000 Lightnings since they started producing them. So what happened to all those orders? Where did they all go? What happened to those people who were so gung-ho for a Ford Lightning? I just the whole thing doesn't make sense to me. But then again, as you know, the whole push to EV, as hard as that push has been, at least in this country, in my mind, that doesn't make sense to me, because I'm one of those people that are of the opinion that the infrastructure has to come first. And once they have infrastructure built out and charging stations that work built out, then maybe we can convince people that EVs are the way to go, not convince them to buy an EV and then we're going to build the damn infrastructure to support it. I think we're doing this ass backwards, but that's just me.
Yeah, so to your point, I'm looking... Pulling a Zach here. Ford Lightnings nationwide new. There are still 9,000 available. So if they have not produced enough to meet the reservations, why are there still so many for sale throughout the nation? So like, have most of those owners canceled those reservations after they made them, because, you know, we see inventory been piling up still. So I have all kinds of questions about what happened to those reservation holders. Was that a real number? Was that just people who were inquiring about it? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense that there's still, you know, some of these on here, 72 days online. Wow. Oh, no, that's 100 days online. Sorry, 110 days. So, you know, where are all these reservation holders if they haven't made enough those yet?
And look at the prices. I mean,
you know. That's where they are.
It's, yeah.
81,000, 72,000, 79,000. I mean, I know this is something you preach all the time. It's the affordability. There's one for 92,000. You want that one, right?
It's the price, stupid. it's really what it is. It's, you know, I can help every one of the manufacturers. It's the price, stupid. The prices of these things are astronomical. And that's what's slowing between a lack of it, of quality infrastructure and the price. That's what's holding people back. I mean, now there's one EV company out there, I don't know, slashed their prices 40%. And allegedly, there's interest in those vehicles now at a 40% discount.
I think we're seeing huge price cuts in the EV industry all over the place. And, you know, inventory is still building up, but, you know, there is an increase still in EV adoption with that. But I think that correlates to those price drops. And, you know, on the EV show today, we will be talking about the depreciation because of those price drops.
And if we may, the last article that I sent you was about our dear friend Henrik Fisker. And before you pull that up, I will do what Zach would want me to do. Really? You got to be kidding me. This is a great Fisker's few dealers remain upbeat about the struggling EV brand. Now, okay, Fisker's few dealers. Few normally means five. Okay. So originally, when Henrik said, well, we're going to create a dealer network, there were allegedly six dealers that had signed up for it. There are three today that appear on the Fisker website as to dealers, and two of the three, or as you like to say, Justice, 67% of them.
That's right. That's two-thirds of them.
Yeah, are optimistic about Fisker and the future of Fisker EVs, which really, you got to be kidding me. I mean, they lowered the price 40% to help spur interest in the vehicle and to help spur sales so that they could hopefully stay out of bankruptcy. Obviously, they're losing a ton on every vehicle. Fisker's losing a ton on every vehicle sold, if that's the case, but they need the cash on hand. Their public stock has been delisted from the New York Stock Exchange because it was regularly trading for under a dollar. Okay. And for those of you who are keeping score at home, it's trading at 2 cents a share. 2 cents. So if you want to make a major investment in Fisker because you believe that 67% of the dealers are gung-ho as to how Fisker's going to be able to go invest some money. They're one of the dealers that was allegedly going to be a dealer doesn't even have a website. and that's the easiest part, I believe. There's another group out there that was supposed to be part of it that, you know, we're not. Maybe in the future we'll revisit it. I don't know. What do you see as the future of Fisker?
Well, I put it this way. There are more people who believe the Earth is flat than people who think Fisker is going to succeed here. This is their third or fourth attempt at being a car company. And, you know, we talked before the show, you know,
yes.
Good for Heinrich Fisker. Like, he seems yes. to still be able to know how to do this. And I think their biggest problem is that they actually released the vehicle instead of sinking it to the bottom of the ocean and collecting insurance like they did last time. So this is, they're having a hard time liquidating it. This, you know, look, this is called the worst EV ever reviewed.
Yes.
So by Marcus Brownlee. And, you know, they did the update and it's still the software update that was creating a lot of the problems is still only half fixed. I talked to the guy in Sacramento who has the Fiskers and, you know, the key fob still doesn't work. If you can't figure out the key fob situation, you know, that has been around for over 20 years.
Yes.
Like, there's so many problems and I just don't. I think the company's finally had its nail in the coffin, but I would have said that two iterations ago. So maybe I'm wrong, you know. Heinrich does seem to know how to convince people to jump on board and give money and keep pushing it. So
yeah.
Who knows? But I think as far as the ocean goes, it's dead.
That's where it belongs, at the bottom.
At the bottom of the ocean. Well, there are several there, if you believe them anyway. So.
Well, I do believe that Consumer Reports in their review said that it was a nauseating vehicle to drive in. It has its issues. Whether or not it will be continuing as a car company for much longer, there is serious doubt. The likelihood of bankruptcy is something that Fisker has said is more likely than not. So we'll see what happens.
Well, remember, Ray, they went to Nissan to try to partner with them.
Yes.
And Nissan, who's not necessarily, you know, one of the top five biggest producers, told them to kick rocks.
Yeah.
You know, they said, no. Nah. When Nissan's telling you, no, nah, we don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah. If Nissan says we can find better and easier ways to lose $475 million, we're out.
They should have gone to Lucid. Lucid seems to have a high threshold for losing money.
Yes. We should all find ourselves a benefactor like Lucid has. Well, you know, we've got another show to do in about 12 minutes.
Before we go, we do have one generous donation from guess who?
A Fly Chomper Fly.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
So when it got bad in 2008, the manufacturers had workers sacrifice,
yes,
with promises to reinstate what they gave up. It never happened until UAW contract. That's exactly right, and that was part of the strike there. You know, whether you believe they deserved to get the percentage they got or not, you got to remember that they hadn't had anything since, you know, the economic downturn. They agreed to this. I don't think Farley and the other CEOs cut their pay in that amount of time and stayed stable.
Well, certainly not to the same degree that they asked the workers to cut their pay. So, yeah. And so thank you for reminding us of that, because during the Great Recession, in order to keep these companies afloat, the workers were asked to give back some of what they had earned.
And remind me, did the government give them money as well?
A couple of the manufacturers.
Yeah.
And people often confuse themselves and think Ford took a bailout. Ford did not.
Ford did not.
Okay, Chrysler did, and GM did. Ford did not. Yeah. So, but
Ford has taken loans since, but like Tesla before them, they were loans that they had to pay back. They were not just, here, let me bail you out and keep things afloat.
Exactly. We have another show to do in 10 minutes.
We do.
What's that one called again?
That is the Car Edge Electric Unplugged. So I expect all 1,859 people to move on over there. That would be the highest viewership we ever had on the show. But come on over there. It's a, you know, for those who don't know, we're a debate style show. So we talk EVs, pro, con, doesn't matter. You know, feel free to come on over and let's debate. We'll probably talk about a lot of this more over there.
Yeah. And Justice, thank you for filling in for Zach today. Zach and I will be back tomorrow night on the Car Edge channel at 7 p.m. Eastern time for, well, live. Saturday Night Live with Car Edge. So we hope to see you there tomorrow night. In the meantime, we'll see you back here on Monday at noon Eastern on the Ray and Zach channel. And you'll see Justice and I and Phil in about 9 minutes on the Electric channel.
That's right. And for Eddie, we're on YouTube, primarily on YouTube. So come find us. This is the Ray and Zach show. You can find Car Edge Electric Unplugged by just Car Edge Electric and your YouTube.
Thanks, everybody. Later.